Welcome to We Go There. I'm Lexi.
And I'm Nikki. And our favorite conversations are when someone starts by saying, this might be TMI,
But hey, we go there. Because there's no such thing as having too much information when it comes to your health and wellness.
We dive deep into topics, interview experts, and get answers you need. Because knowledge is power.
And feeling empowered is what we're all about.
So let's go there.
We are so excited to welcome Dr. Darren Kando to the podcast today. So a funny story, I found Dr. Darren on Instagram because he is the OG of all things creatine. He is a professor and the director of the anti-aging or the aging muscle and bone health laboratory in the Faculty of Kinesiology and Health Studies at the University of Regina. And he is a clinical certified exercise physiologist, and he has been studying creatine for the last 2 decades. So while it's becoming more of a hot topic now, I mean, Dr. Darren, you've been studying this for a very long time, and we are so thrilled to be able to ask you all the questions today.
No, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
All right, where do we dive in? I did a question box last night, and we had quite a few questions from the Bell Method community about creatine. And full disclosure, I just recently started taking it myself. I'm going to say 3 weeks ago. Okay. So I'm dabbling now. And I know, Lexi, your interest has been piqued as well. I think you said you might start it as well. She's nodding her head.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, definitely. And I think like learning more, Nikki, about your experience, understanding the baseline of like, I feel like we have to start at like, what is creatine? Because my reference point is bodybuilders. Like that's just kind of what I associated it with. And so when Nikki started posting about this, and I'm the type of person, like I literally, I'll eat anything that's healthy for me. I'll take anything. If you tell me it's going to help me like longevity wise, like I will do it. So as soon as Nikki like started sharing this and she was doing this, I immediately was like, what is this? How do I get on this bandwagon? Like, what is your experience? And I thought this was for bodybuilders. So maybe we start there.
Yeah. Right. And that's an excellent segue because it was designed for bodybuilders to get bigger, stronger, faster. And in the late 1990s, that's exactly the people who consumed this product. And then people did a little bit more research. But creatine is basically, it's very similar to a protein. It was discovered in 1832, even before our energy currency of our cell, and it's been around for a long time. But basically, we're actually producing about 1 to 3 grams per day in our brain and liver. And we also consume this product through red meat, seafood, or poultry. So we can naturally produce it. So you were taking it, even though if you didn't even know you were taking it. But I think the crux is supplementation. It's becoming so popular. I think there's been a 50% growth even this year already in creatine sales because it's becoming a health product, not just for bodybuilders and elite athletes. But simply, creatine will come into our muscles or other cells of the body and provide more energy. So a lot of people say, hey, I'm taking creatine. I can do a few more repetitions. I can run faster or recover between the subsequent exercise bouts, which I think has a lot more promise for individuals 40 and above where inflammation is really high. And then we'll talk today for sure about postmenopausal females or the menopausal transition, how we're really thinking creatine can play a role. So it's gone from just elite athletes to pretty much anybody on the planet, including during pregnancy, can at least consider this. And why? Well, it's really safe and we're naturally producing it. So it's probably no different than protein. And that's why it seems to have a really high safety and efficacy portfolio.
Interesting. So that was a huge question, like around pregnancy, breastfeeding, like everyone's like, you know, because obviously there's so much caution around what is safe in pregnancy and so much stuff has simply not been researched. And you know this, especially this gap on the research on women. So how much stuff has been studied around creatine specifically for females?
Yeah. So regarding pregnancy, very minimal. Stacey Ellery is an Australian. She's the world's leader on this. And they primarily use an animal model. Obviously, it's a lot safer and it's easier to get through their ethics application. And it's been shown that, you know, during pregnancy and during fetal development, obviously for the child, bioenergetics, primarily in the brain, are really elevated. And that's where creatine seems to come into play. It sort of decreases inflammation, so it can have some beneficial effects. The vast majority have been shown in the animal model, primarily in mice. There's been a few in humans. But again, as you mentioned, caution, you need to talk to your doctor. So whatever we bring up today, please just don't go out and start taking creatine. Please talk to your doctor. But again, since you're naturally producing it and the energy status of the female is obviously heightened during pregnancy, it kind of makes sense why it may have some small but potential health effects. And then as we go through the lifespan into children and adolescents and then in the postmenopausal years, the focus on females has really blossomed in the last decade, which is great because it was so underrepresented. It was really difficult to get young females to take creatine. I think there was errors in the way they were taking it. It led to water retention or weight gain. And so there's ways to get around that. So I'm really happy to see that females are now becoming a focal point for research.
So funny story, I went into the store and asked, it was like our local Healthy Planet, which is a chain of health food stores in the Toronto area. And I walk in and I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to go and get some creatine. And all I knew was to get monohydrate.
Yes.
And I didn't know anything about brands. I was like, I'm just going to show up and get monohydrate. So I'm like, do you know? And then this woman was like, shook her head and was like, oh, I work here, but I don't know anything about that. Go talk to that guy. And so he came around the corner and there was me and another man in this creatine protein section. And the guy just immediately went up to the dude and he's like, oh, you have creatine? And I just sort of was like there, I'm like waving my hand. I'm like, actually it's me.
But and that's the stigma behind it. Yeah. It's exactly right. Yeah.
But
muscle bump. Mm-hmm.
It was all on.
Yes. The Yeah, exactly.
So can we talk about, cause I know the water retention was something that like you mentioned in your posts around like something that people are often worried about with the bloating that can come with it. And you mentioned,
weight gain too, right?
Mm-hmm. And weight gain. And so I was just talking to my trainer, I was mentioning this before we got on, around this, who has been taking creatine, female, now in her 50s. Since like for the last 20 years and swears by it. So she takes it 3 times a day, like spread out 3 times a day. And her commentary was around water retention and the fact that it's, if you don't take it the right way, that that can result in it not even benefiting your body, flushing through your body and also resulting water retention. Is that somewhat like...
Yeah. So accurate? One of the main important things, especially for the females watching, is all the products will recommend something called a loading phase. And this is primarily just for those athletes, you know, Paris Olympics coming up. They really need a fast, rapid boost, but that's 20 grams of creatine powder a day for 7 days. Now we're only producing about 1 to 3 grams. So that's almost, you know, 10 times as much as we're naturally producing. So creatine is osmotic. That means when you put creatine into the bloodstream, it takes water from the blood into your muscle. And therefore, you get an increase in something called intracellular water. So you feel bigger, and that's what leads to a net increase in water retention or weight gain on the scale. You don't see this subside over time. It only lasts for about a week. So the interesting thing is primarily in females, if you were to participate in 6 weeks of creatine, your weight is going to be almost identical from start to finish. But what the theory is that creatine has been shown to have a small decrease in body fat. So it doesn't increase body fat. It actually decreases body fat a little bit. You'll increase lean tissue mass. So that's why the number on the scale roughly stays the same. We do not recommend the loading phase unless you're an athlete, because you can get GI tract irritation or that weight gain, which a lot of people say, whoa, it's not for me. To your point, your trainer said, hey, let's take in smaller dosages. That's what we recommend. If you're looking at it from just a muscle perspective, you need as little as 3 grams a day. So it's not the loading phase. So I think for those interested in just trying it or considering it, take 3 grams a day, but I would take it in 2 1.5 dosages in the morning with food and then in the evening. You can work your way up to 5 and then maybe even divide that into 2 dosages. Can you take it in one dose, like 3 or 5 grams? Absolutely. But some people say, hey, they didn't like the feeling. It caused a little bit of GI tract irritation. That's a really low dose. But from a scientific perspective, that's just from a muscle perspective. We don't think that dose is nearly high enough for bone health or brain health.
Oh, interesting. I've only been doing, I've been just basically waiting for this conversation for you to tell me what to do. But okay. I've been guessing. So I've been taking 3 a day in the morning all at once. So what's the dose that's really beneficial? Because I want the brain, I want to concentrate better. I want better brain function. So what do I need to take for that?
So, and I want to talk, let's talk more about the brain piece, because that was a full surprise today when I heard that.
So 95% of your creatine is stored in your muscle. So that means you got 5% being spread across other areas, including your immune system, bone, and brain. Now, if you're taking 3 grams, the majority will accumulate into the muscle. And then since it's such a low dose, that's about the amount needed to just maintain your muscle stores. So if you're only taking 3 grams a day for long periods of time, it's highly unlikely to trickle in and give you bone and brain benefits. So now over time, I think you can adopt a higher dosage. I personally take 10 grams a day for the whole body. The lowest dose that has been shown to be effective in combination with exercise for bone is about 8 grams. And the brain is really unique. Excuse me. The brain is really unique. It has a blood-brain barrier, as we know. Our muscle likes to suck up creatine like a vacuum. Our brain says, whoa, whoa, whoa. We make our own creatine, and we also have a reduction in the ability to take it in. So that means you need longer, higher dosages to accumulate in the brain tissue. And there's 2 ways to go about it. You could take about 4 to 5 grams, but it takes several months to accumulate, or you can go to the loading phase and you need to take that for at least 1 week. We've already talked about some of the potential adverse effects with the loading phase. So I've done the math, and that's why I take 10 grams. I take it in 2 5-gram dosages. I take 5 grams with breakfast, and then I put 5 grams in my water bottle and drink it during my workout. The timing is irrelevant. You can break it up into as much as you like. I wouldn't go any lower than 1 gram servings, just because it became a pain in the butt, so to speak, to always having to take 1 gram. But I think if you want to do 3, 3, and 3 over time, that's fine. But again, for those starting, Nikki, you're going to be fine. 3 grams for first little bit. If you don't notice any water retention, increase it up to 5 for a couple of weeks, and then eventually get there for the lifelong journey. Again, we're trying to promote dietary creatine and or supplementation for the small beneficial effect you get on top of exercise for longevity.
This episode of the We Go There podcast is brought to you by The Bell Method, a fitness company that blends Pilates with pelvic health, creating choreography from science. You might feel overwhelmed at all the abs after baby programs promising to make you bounce back after birth. Or maybe you're feeling unsure of how to exercise in pregnancy and prepare your body for delivery. It can be tough to navigate what information is credible and evidence-based. Women deserve better. I created all of our programs with the guidance of pelvic health physiotherapists, and we continue to evolve our programming to stay current with the latest research. At The Bell Method, we ditch guilt and bring balance to our bodies with programs designed to fit your life stage. We'll help you reduce incontinence, diastasis recti, and prolapse so you feel strong, confident, and empowered throughout pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond. I invite you to enjoy 10% off your first class session with the code WEGOTHERE10. Visit www.thebellmethod.com for more.
And I mean, I'm thinking about, you're a man and I'm a woman and you were bigger than me. So you're still saying that I could still manage. Like, I guess the question is, should the amount that you're taking be based on your weight?
So that's our pride and joy. That's what we do in our lab. We base it on the size of the person. So most supplement labels, they won't go to a relative dose. They'll say take 3 to 5 grams or whichever. We always base it on the size of the person. That controls for biological, sex, and muscle mass. So we use 0.1 gram per kilogram in young individuals, or 0.15 grams per kilogram in older individuals, 50 and above. So let's do the math. If you're 70 kilograms, that's 7 grams a day if you're younger. But if you're older, that's about 10 grams a day. And then again, you can divide that up over time. We just published the longest study ever to look at creatine and exercise in postmenopausal females. We gave them 11 grams a day for 2 straight years, and it has some substantial beneficial effects, but it had no jeopardizing effects on the kidney or liver. So that's why we're really confident that even if you go a bit higher, at worst, you might pee some down the toilet. It's not going to probably have any greater adverse effects than placebo.
That's really interesting. So, we need to put those, by the way, those the data and the study links in our show notes.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, for sure. And so can we talk about women specifically and why is this a great option, and specifically with like menopause, perimenopausal women, what are the benefits and why should we be thinking about this now, like right now, right, Nikki?
So this is huge because it's so underrepresented, but it's such a population that seems to have the best potential. So the greater prevalence of individuals that are vegan, vegetarian, or emphasizing a plant-based diet are females. Now, remember, creatine is primarily only found in meat. So females or males that are vegetarian sort of have 50% capacity to grow, whereas a carnivore only has about 20%. So in other words, if the living room is 50% full of creatine, you can double the amount. But if you're already eating a lot of red meat and seafood, you're probably getting a lot through the diet. So that's what we refer to as responders and non-responders. When we see female vegans take creatine, they respond exceptionally well, not only from a muscle perspective, but if you have more muscle, it's pulling on bone throughout the day. And that's why we think it has some bone beneficial effects. And then secondly, as we get older, the cessation of estrogen is catastrophic. Estrogen is so anabolic, not only to muscle and bone, but the ovaries are not producing enough estrogen. The adrenal cortex on the kidneys produce a little amount, but probably not nearly enough to rescue the effects. And therefore, exercise is foundational, and creatine can potentially have some bone beneficial effects, especially for postmenopausal females. The area we really need to focus on is premenopausal and the perimenopausal transition. We don't know the effects there. I'm collaborating with Abby Smith Ryan in North Carolina. She seems to be the world's leader when it's looking at different phases of the menstrual cycle. So again, it's a population we just don't have a lot of research on. It's so precious. They're fantastic subjects. And again, it's an area that we really want to try to decrease the rate of bone mineral loss or bone strength loss. And could that offset the incidence of fractures or falls? You know, we spend almost $1 billion in Canada just on hip replacement surgery, you know, falling on icy roads and things. And maybe these individuals might fall. It'll be embarrassing, but maybe they may not suffer a fracture. So that's our overall goal. Creatine used to be just for athletes, and we're starting to see the huge health implications of it. Yeah.
And when would you suggest that women start to take it, like in their teens, as early as that? Like any part in their, like, is, I understand that the research isn't quite there yet, but I mean, I don't know if you had someone in your life who was, you know, 18 years old, would you say, you can consider taking creatine?
Yeah. So the way I premise this, everybody in the world is taking creatine naturally because you're actually either eating it or synthesizing it. There's some excellent research in the United States looking at creatine in children. And as it stands right now, it's been very effective and safe. They're looking at blood biomarkers to see the effects. But in Canada, we can't really do any research unless you're under or over the age of 18. So usually around the age of 18 is where all our research is done. So again, just like pregnancy, caution is advised. But I see no reason why anybody on the planet can't. It's very similar to protein. You take it in, your body recognizes it, and if it doesn't like it, it'll just excrete it down the toilet. So a very small dose has been shown to be very safe and effective in children. And again, we've seen that across the lifespan. So can a 10-year-old take creatine? Yes. Do they need to have guidance and recommendation and supervision? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's probably no different than eating a chicken breast. It probably has the same effect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we know we're supposed to take monohydrate. Mm-hmm. On that, like when you're looking, there's all these different brands on the shelf, and I'm not going to recommend like endorse a specific brand, but what should we be looking for when we're shopping for creatine?
Yeah. So three things. First, only monohydrate. Don't get conned into any of the other marketing that's way more expensive. Monohydrate means creatine linked to water. When you consume it and it gets through the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, it's still intact, but the water molecule diffuses. So the nice thing is whatever you're consuming from monohydrate, it's identical to what's being recognized in the liver and brain. Second, make sure it's third-party tested. Make sure the product has third-party tested, that it doesn't have impurities and things like that. And the third thing is make sure that ingredient is, that's it, creatine. Don't buy something that has about 9 or 10 other things because you don't know about the bioavailability or the interaction. Do you need to take creatine? No. remember, we're synthesizing a small amount. So vegans and vegetarians live a long, healthy, very productive life without taking supplementation. If you consume a little bit in the diet, that's great too. But you can get slightly greater benefits by supplementation, and that's what we're trying to focus on. The way I premise it, the cake that you make is resistance training or exercise. The nice chocolate icing, which makes it taste way better, is protein. And then the sprinkles on it to make the child eat it is probably going to be creatine. So again, protein is essential for survival. Creatine is not, because we're naturally producing it. And that's kind of how I think some people need to start looking at it. It's not a miracle supplement. You still need to do work, but it can provide some benefits.
I love that you mentioned that you need to still do work, because a lot of questions that I got in the question box were like, how active do I need to be to benefit from it? Like if I'm just taking it and I'm not actually exercising, is that a problem?
You'll get minimal muscle benefits without exercise. Now keep in mind, they're probably performing activities of daily living. And you'll probably get minimal, if any, brain benefits without exercise as well. You'll get no bone benefits without exercise. So the way I like to premise this is 99% of all the totality of creatine is unlocked when you exercise. But there is some evidence you can get some high performance measures of muscle performance, like strength, endurance, and power, or power by not having resistance training be part of the study. But for the most part, we're trying to recommend exercise first. Supplementation and all these things provide a very small benefit. But the key there, especially from an aging perspective, where we're already reducing the biological process of the body, exercise and nutrition are there to help halt and potentially give small improvements.
So basically, you should be exercising if you take it.
That's kind of what I got. I really suggest that, because, you know, if you're going to go out and take a supplement, and again, the key word there is supplement. In this case, you're adding it to your natural diet. If you're going to say, I'm going to take creatine and watch Netflix for 3 hours a night, you're not going to notice any benefits. Like at the end of the day, you're not going to notice any benefits. We often hear individuals say, hey, I could recover a little bit more from my exercise. I didn't need as much sleep. I feel more energized throughout the day, less lethargic, and that's going to help you get your 150 minutes of cardio or two or three sessions of weight training a week. At the end of the day, I think you're going to buy it if it's relatively cheap and it helps maintain consistency with exercise.
Yeah. So how much exercise, I guess, is going to be the question. I'm trying to put myself in the perspective of someone listening who's maybe at home, doesn't have a lot of time, they're nursing, they're stuck with kids at home, you know what I mean? So how much exercise would someone need to be doing to get those benefits?
Yeah, so it'll just stimulate the benefits of any exercise, but most of the studies do a minimum of 2 days a week of exercise, primarily weight training.
Okay.
That's feasible.
That's what the Canadian government suggests, 2 or more days a week, and I think we can do that.
Yeah. I'm pulling up more questions that came through, but Lex.
So what, Nikki, how have you been feeling? Like, have you experienced water retention? Like, let's hear about your experience so far.
So I'm only taking a small amount. And the reason that I did that was because I was also concerned around like feeling, you know, bloated. And I did notice, and I'm very in tune with my body, but I did notice that my rings got tight. So there was some water retention for sure. And the scale did go up. I want to say like 4 pounds or so. But then I also, you know, whenever I'm at the gym, I did notice, I'm like, oh, I can feel like, I don't know if it's psychosomatic, it probably hasn't been in my body long enough, but like placebo, I'm not sure, but I'm like, of course, I'm like, I'm going to look heavier because now I'm taking creatine. So I don't know what was the variable there, but.
Yeah. And so that would tell me you're a responder, which is great. We recommend to drink more water because you're pulling water from the blood. And you don't want to make the blood very thick. You're going to pee a little bit more down the line. But remember, after about 10 days or 2 weeks, that weight gain is going to come back to baseline. And then it's going to unlock all the beneficial effects. Yeah.
I'm a responder. Yay. How many people are non-responders? Like, is that a number? Are there a certain percentage of the population?
Yeah, if they're already having a lot of creatine in the muscle, supplementation will sort of increase your muscle capacity by about 20%. But if you're a carnivore diet, you're probably going to be a non-responder. You're already taking in so much creatine that you don't need from supplementation. Whereas a vegan are usually super responders. They respond exceptionally well.
Yeah, I don't eat red meat. So there you go.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Lexi here. Okay. So let's shift to another under the radar, not so hot topic for a minute.
body hair. Everyone's got it, but a lot of us want to live smoother. Am I right? 10 years ago, I started Wax On Laser and Wax Bar. Wax On isn't just any waxing and laser hair removal bar. We are the industry leader, creating a safe space that inspires people to live confidently in their own skin. Over the years, we've developed trust. Trust that you know you're getting the best quality and comfortable experience every single time. Whatever you come to Wax On for, it's going to be awesome. We've created our own exclusive gold wax formula that's like no other. It's as pain-free and long-lasting as it gets, perfect for all your waxing needs. At Wax On, we've invested in top-of-the-line laser technology that's effective on virtually any hair and skin tone for effective results on every body. Seriously. And we carry a carefully curated collection of products. Some we make ourselves, locally, I might add, and some are from brands we've fallen in love with that adhere to our values and standards of clean, good for you, and female founded. If you haven't experienced Wax On, I invite you to enjoy 20% off your first service with code WEGOTHERE. Visit waxon.ca or download the mobile app to book in with code WEGOTHERE, because there is such a thing as a better hair removal experience to help you live smoother.
Oh my gosh, I've got so many more questions. Oh yeah. Someone asked about a pill or a powder. I'd never heard of a creatine pill. Is that a thing?
It is, yeah. Pills or the new gummies are out there. They're a solid, so there's no reason why they wouldn't be a bioavailable source of creatine. But creatine in solution is not bioavailable. It degrades too quickly. So any powder, solid form is a very viable source, yes.
So you prefer powder over a pill or a gummy? I would presume it's more pure than like the stuff that you have to put in a gummy.
Yeah, so I'll put the powder in food, but I also have the gummy that I can eat. And then whichever it is very convenient, yeah.
Oh. Nikki, what are you taking?
Just the powder in water. Yeah. Because anytime it comes in like a sort of processed thing, presumption was that it wasn't as good if it had to come in a gummy form.
There is a little bit of research. If you combine your creatine with protein, you get a synergistic effect. So that's something that if you say, hey, I can put my powder in on whatever you eat, but if there's protein, there's no taste to it. It's something to consider as well. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it's completely tasteless and it dissolves easily in water. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Just don't put it in coffee.
Break it down?
The problem, I shouldn't say don't put it in coffee, but there is good research from a cellular perspective that shows that caffeine and creatine don't like each other at a high dose of caffeine. Now, if you just have a normal cup of coffee at 80 milligrams or even something larger, but anything more than 200 milligrams, so that would be a large Starbucks or Tim Hortons. If you put it in combination for over the long term, there's evidence that they negate each other. So since the timing of creatine is irrelevant, and if you say, hey, this is the only way I'm going to take it, I'm like, go ahead. You're probably still going to get benefits because a cup of coffee is only about 80 milligrams. But if you put your creatine consistently in a large coffee and let it sit around, there's evidence that they oppose one another at a cell level and you may not get the same benefits. Yeah.
Okay. So would it
play well in the playground, coffee and creatine?
Like, do you have to then have, cause I usually have like a shot. I have my little Nespresso in the morning and then I have my creatine. So you're saying, would it be beneficial to separate the timing of your cup of coffee and the timing of your creatine consumption?
In theory, it would. We still don't know. Again, it's not coffee or espresso. It's the dose of caffeine we think is the limiting factor. But any individual shot or things like that. My thought is if you put your 5 grams of creatine in a large Starbucks and, you sip on it for 2 hours, maybe if you did that every single day over time, it may not give you the same benefits. But if you just dump it in a cup of coffee and drink it, I highly doubt that the amount of time for the caffeine or the acidity environment, caffeine or creatine can maintain at a really low pH. But there has been some studies, I have to say this, that if you're looking at caffeine powder and or creatine powder at a cell level, they do oppose each other, but not with coffee. But of course, we mainly think caffeine, coffee. So it's an important distinction.
Interesting.
Got it. I had a question from someone that was really good and no one else asked this, but
okay.
Is it true or is there any truth to this fact that potentially if you start to supplement with creatine, then your body stops producing its own?
Yeah, there's zero evidence to support that. If any, there's evidence to suggest it doesn't exist. So we have gene expression in our chromosomes, and a study at McMaster University in Hamilton clearly showed that when you take creatine, it doesn't downregulate or stop our natural production. There was a study in rats where they gave a super physiological dose of creatine, and it did stop the natural production in the brain as well as liver, but the dose was almost toxic for a human. So we're not seeing any short-term data to suggest that.
Okay. And is there anyone who should just simply not take it, like someone who has kidney disease or something like mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, so we usually do not allow individuals with pre-existing kidney or any hepatic or liver abnormalities in the study unless they have medical clearance. Creatine will make the kidneys and liver work a little bit harder because that's where it's basically synthesized. But there's also evidence to suggest that individuals, even with kidney abnormalities, when they take creatine, there's no greater adverse effects. But again, any abnormalities or issues, please talk to your doctor. I will preface, though, that for those listening, if they're thinking of taking creatine, one thing to make sure you tell your doctor is that you're on it. Because when you go get your blood requisition form, they're going to check off a number or a letter called creatinine. So when creatine comes into the body, it gets broken down to a metabolic byproduct called creatinine, which is part of your GFR when they measure your blood panel. And that's going to simply mean that your kidneys are destroyed. No, what it means is you've taken creatine and that's why creatinine is elevated. So please tell your doctor, hey, I'm on creatine. My creatinine will probably be higher. My GFR is probably going to be lower. So that doesn't necessarily mean I have kidney issues.
Oh, that's a hot tip right there.
It is. Yeah. Because it gives a false positive. A lot of people start to get really worried. They stop taking the creatine, their kidneys go back to normal. So they just know it was the breakdown of the metabolite. So your nephrologist or GP, just make sure your estimated GFR and creatinine are going to be higher. That does not mean your kidneys are failing.
GFR?
Unless you have some other thing going on. Yeah.
What does GFR stand for?
Oh, the estimated glomerular filtration rate. So our kidneys have these things called nephrons. They're like filters, like a Brita filter, and it just filters everything out of the body. And so if you're having too much being in the blood, that means the kidneys are not getting rid of it. But the reason it's elevated in the blood is because you're on supplementation.
So it's going to potentially, like if there was an issue mm-hmm. with your actual kidneys, mm-hmm. on creatine, and then you go and you obviously get your blood work done and you have an elevated look, could that potentially mask something?
It could. So the way they to see it, your numbers are going to be super high. They're going to measure your liver. And if your liver's fine, then we're going to say, oh, it might be the supplement. So all they get you to do is stop taking the supplement for 4 weeks. You come back, measure it again. Oh, your kidneys are fine. Then you can go back on the supplement. But, you know, I'm not a medical doctor, but obviously just knowing the biophysics of it and the metabolism, it simply means that it's being released from the muscle. When you're working out, that's why creatine is being elevated in the bloodstream.
Okay.
Or creatinine, sorry.
Good to know. They're going to alert your kidneys are all just, yes. Actually, no, I'm just taking creatine. Good to know.
Yeah. Now, the lower the dose you take, sometimes it doesn't even fluctuate, but the higher the dose it can. Yeah.
Is there something that you wish more women specifically knew about creatine that you sort of want to put out there and blast out to everybody listening?
I think the biggest one is that over time, it will not increase body weight. I think that's the number one reason, or especially fat mass. The other area is it seems to have some bone health benefits that a lot of individuals are not considering. And at the end of the day, yes, females respond just like males from a muscle performance perspective. They do get an increase in lean tissue mass. It doesn't seem to be the same magnitude, but at the end of the day, it's not just for males. You're not going to get big and bulky, but it has a lot of health benefits that I think are really important for females, especially.
You heard it here, ladies.
Yeah. I'm
you gonna do it, Lex?
Yeah, like I mean, sign me up. Why not?
And here's another big thing. I know, you know, in different parts of Canada we've had a mild winter, but hey, I'm going to Mexico for spring break. And you don't want to bring a bag of white powder across the border or flying, and you say, hey. So this is something that a lot of people don't know, but once your muscles become full of creatine, it takes about 30 days at about 3 grams a day. It's that level stays in your muscles for an additional month. So let's hypothetically say, hey, I'm going to go away for a month and lay on the beach. when you come back, your muscle stores would probably not have decreased below baseline. If anything, they're elevated. When you're on vacation, and if you do consume red meat, seafood, or poultry, consume that. That'll help maintain. And also, please continue to be physically active. Activating the muscle will help maintain creatine concentration. It's not going to increase it more, but by being slightly active, even on vacation, that's two strategies to help maintain that. Muscle creatine stores seem to be elevated for about 4 weeks. The brain is even more picky. It takes about 5 weeks to come back to baseline.
Wow. Mood benefits too, right? I was reading about this briefly, just about can actually improve depression. Is that true?
That's the new area of focus, the neck up. So individuals with clinical depression still taking medication, when they've added creatine, it seemed to improve the symptoms of depression and anxiety and PTSD. Again, it's never been shown without medication. So that's a huge area of caution. It's also have a promise for concussion. This was only in children, and it seemed to speed up the incidence of concussion recovery. It's not really shown any promise in healthy young individuals from a cognition perspective, unless they're metabolically stressed, such as sleep deprived. And that's the area that we see a lot of promise. There's been some evidence in memory and cognition for older adults, which I think is huge. But having Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington's, we just don't have enough data to suggest there's any beneficial effects. So for the next 20 years, I think the neck up is going to be the big focal point. I would speculate depression and concussion will probably be the main areas. All those conditions have a common denominator. The brain level of creatine is reduced compared to a healthy control. So the theory is maybe supplementation will allow more creatine to get into the compromised brain to overcompensate for some of those negative effects. And the mechanisms come back to almost the same for muscle. It seems to decrease inflammation, kind of preserving an environment for optimal health. So it's a very interesting area. Yeah.
What are you going to be studying? Well, what are you currently studying in your lab? And what are some of the things you hope to study yourself in the future?
Yeah, so the upcoming labs or studies, we're really trying to finish the chapter, if you will, on does the timing of creatine really matter? And that's going to be in young individuals. And then we have a few studies planned on looking at creatine for an at-home exercise with rubber tubing. This idea that blossomed with COVID when the government says stay home and be inactive. And we're like, no, that's the worst thing you can do. Can't simply be working out at home and in older adults with sarcopenia or 50 years and above, can it have applications on muscle and bone? But I'm very fortunate to collaborate with researchers around the world. We're looking at brain function. We're also looking at women's health. So I'm very fortunate to work with a lot of really good researchers, and there's lots more to come. It's kind of interesting. Creatine was popular in the 90s and got boring, and now it's kind of taken on a life of its own. So I'm just very fortunate to be part of it and work with a lot of exceptional people.
Yes, it's trending.
It's trending.
Yeah, it's trending. Yeah, it's very much trending. It's exciting. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your knowledge around creatine. I'm going to jump on board and start dabbling myself because that's what I do.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's great.
But yeah, this is great information
too. Also as a scientist, sometimes you're long winded, but you are not. You do a lot of interviews. You're so good at teaching and explaining these concepts.
Okay. Thank you for the kind words and the opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode. And in the meantime, follow us on Instagram @WeGoTherePodcast and check out WeGoTherePodcast.com for more info.